I just read a book by an atheist who was seeking truth, and it was fascinating where she kept on ending up despite herself. Stay tuned. I had very logical reasons for believing in things that logic and reason could never teach me. It's kind of ironic, but the more complexity science finds in life, the less likely becomes the whole scenario and theory they use to explain its origin. The really amazing thing is that quantum physics shows that nature, at its most fundamental level, strains human credulity and knowledge in ways biblical faith never does. Hola, Cliff Goldstein here. Welcome to the program. Not long ago, I read a book by a woman named Barbara Ehrenreich, or Ehrenreich. It was called Living with a Wild God, a non-believer's search for the truth about everything. Wow. I mean, you want to talk about a title that would catch my interest. First of all, a wild God? I wondered what she was talking about. And frankly, when I got done with the book, I still wondered what wild God was she talking about. But what really caught my interest was the subtitle, A Non-Believer's Search for the Truth About Everything. Man, now you want to talk about something that really floats my boat. That did it, okay? And that's this, particularly the idea of a search for truth. You talk of, that's me. I had always been a seeker. I remember I was a teenager. My friends used to say to me, you're a seeker, you're a seeker. And I've told my story here before, how one day in a pizza parlor in Gainesville, Florida, way back in the 70s, it hit me that truth, that there really was a truth out there for people to seek. Okay, so anyway, but also what caught my attention in this title was her quest for a truth about everything. Everything? I mean, good luck with that, lady. I mean, come on, you could take the truth, take a walnut. A walnut, you know, there can be the truth about a walnut could be very multifaceted, okay? What was its orange? What was its origins, its causes? Aristotle had his four different causes to look at, you know, the final, efficient, material, and formal cause, you know? What about its chemical makeup? What about its subatomic makeup? You can go in ideas about its nutrient values, the truth about the economic value. I mean, there are endless different ways to go at the truth of a walnut, and yet she wants the truth about everything? Well, you know, there is in science, or even I'd say, well, it's philosophy and science too, because sometimes it's not easy to know the difference between science and philosophy, and an awful lot of error gets out there when you don't discern the two. But there is this idea of a theory of everything, or a final theory, one ultimate theory. Maybe you could say you could write it on a t-shirt, you know, that would explain everything from creation to love to, you know, to why cherries are red. One theory that explains it all. That's the hope anyway. Whether they'll ever do it or not, well, I think there is an explanation, but science ain't gonna get you there. But that's a whole other story. Anyway, back to Barbara Ehrenreich, or Ehrenreich, and excuse me if I'm butchering her name. What really also caught my attention was a non-believer's search for the truth about everything. Of course, in a sense, nobody's a non-believer in the sense they don't believe in anything. Nihilism, I suppose, comes closest to the idea. They say they don't believe in anything, but, well, you know, they believe life is meaningless and it's all meaningless and all purposeless. Well, but that's a belief then. Okay, so you're not a non-believer. Everybody ultimately believes in something. And I would say everybody ultimately, whatever they believe in, take it on a certain amount of faith. But that too is a whole other story. But in Ehrenreich's case, her non-believer is someone who doesn't believe in God, or in what you call the more traditional, whatever that is, understandings of God. She was raised in a family of atheists. And this is unbelievable to me. I find this. I grew up in an atheist family, but we were kind of Thermidorian atheists, nothing like this. But she told how Sunday mornings as a child, instead of going to church, her father would read to the kids writing of this 19th century atheist apologist, Robert Ingersoll. I mean, if that's true, that is an amazing story, but anyway. So I could say this woman, she got her atheism honestly. Anyway, early on in the book, she wrote about where she was going on her search or where she wasn't. And early on, and I want you to keep this in your mind and listen to this because this is important. She said, "The one place I never thought to look for answers was religion." Okay? However, as we'll see, despite herself, time and again, poor Barbara ends up moving in that direction. But anyway, where did she look? Let me tell you, at 13 years old, and that was pretty young, the same thing kind of hit me a little bit older. But she said at 13 years old, she got hit with what she called the situation. And what was the situation? Was that, but despite all the ups and downs of life, she writes, it's all followed by, yes, death. As I have talked numerous times on this show, time and time and time again, people come back to the inevitability of death and what it does to life. She says, at this point, I set my goal for life, which was to find out why. What is the point of our brief existence? What are we doing here and to what end? And where did she look? She's a beautiful writer. Oh, man, I would love to have this woman's command of English language. I read everything I could lay my hands on, from popularized science to the romantic poets. And just in case the answer lay all around me in some more hidden form, I looked for patterns everywhere. Anagrams, number sequences, clusters, coincidence. I still do these things and tend to think of them as normal requirements of the waking state. Counting whatever items present themselves, checking for prime numbers, good old primes, monitoring for tiny trends in the number of birds or the passage of cars as seen from a hotel window, inventing elaborate backstories for everything I encounter. Woo, very interesting. Okay, I guess that does show, she's aware somewhat of a potential reality of something going on behind the veneer, the surface of things. Anyway, through the book, she deals with her life. It's just kind of a memoir, she focuses on her spiritual quest. She's obviously a very sharp cookie. And while young, she came to one conclusion early on. She said, just carry on about the meaning of life. And this was her conclusion. Just carry on those germ cells and populate the earth. That seemed to be the entire agenda. Well, all right. Another time, getting a little more metaphysical, not quite so physical per se, she said it all boiled down to two sentences. I exist and I know nothing. Well, that's a bit of a start from Descartes' cogito ergo sum, But I suppose, though, you could challenge the logic here. She knows she exists, so she knows something, not nothing. But anyway, the book goes on, and she worked from her atheist perspective, and she dallies a bit into spiritual things, every now and then admitting reluctantly. It's almost like she had to put her pen in her other hand or type upside down to admit it. But she kind of admitted there might be, heaven forbid, horror of horrors, there might be more than just the natural. She admitted it, but only barely admitted it. But she does return to one theme, which is prevalent, I believe, in all these searches for meanings and truth. She writes, "Or you could say that I was rebelling against banality, but only if you understand by banality the near universal refusal to recognize the situation." Remember, the situation is, we're all dead meat in the long run, including the impending death of all of us. It made me almost frantic that everyone could go on doing what they were doing without ever acknowledge what was going on. The steady turning of the earth and the passage of days leading, as far as anyone could tell, to the absolute darkness of nothing. Well, thank you, woman, but, you know, she's right. On one level, how do you deny that? And she comes back again to death. This motif occurs, I'm telling you, in almost every book I've ever read about the search for answers. It all comes back to death. What does death do to the life that we're seeking to figure out what its meaning is all about? Now, there's one section here, fairly early on, where she describes, I don't know any other word to describe it other than kind of a mystical experience she had standing on some street in some little tick town, Lone Pine, Northern California. And I'm just going to read you what she said, because, and then you tell me, I found the whole thing a little kind of fuzzy and kind of inchoate, but anyway, in the next few minutes on that empty street, I found whatever I had been looking for since the articulation of my quest, or perhaps, given my mental passivity at the moment, whatever had been looking for me. Ooh, this gets interesting later. Here we leave the jurisdiction of language, where nothing is left but vague gurgles of surrender expressed in words like ineffable and transcendent. Ooh, transcendent. Whoa, you're an atheist now. Now, I'm not going to quote much of what followed, because even though it meant something to her, it was just kind of hard to grasp what it all meant. And she said, too, that it was hard to explain with words. But then she said, suddenly the world flamed into life, just this blazing everywhere. Something poured into me and I poured out into it. Well, that was it. This was some kind of metaphysical experience or another, spiritual experience. Let me read a little more. In the next few, I read that already. Oh, she said that, but then she says what I just quoted, the transcendent, and then she says, if there are no words for it, then don't say anything about it. But then here's what she adds to it. Fascinating. Otherwise, you risk of slopping into spirituality, which in addition to being a crime against reason, is of no more interest to other people than your dreams. In other words, she didn't want to tell people about this because, you know, nobody's going to care. It's her own thing. But I found it fascinating. First of all, spirituality is a crime against reason? Whoa, that's a statement built on a host of assumptions that are in the end a leap of faith. But anyway, I still found it interesting that she would bring in the word transcendence. And again, if you're baffled by she's standing there and everything blazed in the light, what it all means, I am too. But whatever it was, this was some kind of mystical experience, and she almost brings in the word spirituality. Well, she does in transcendence. And again, as far as I know, if I could read in the book, she never cashed it out. What did it mean? What did it answer? How did this help her with the situation? I don't know. Again, she never explained. Anyway, the book goes on with her life. Couple of marriages, kids, work, writing, her political involvement, her mental health challenges, and she had written a powerful, powerful article that you could find on the internet for Harper's about her breast cancer called Welcome to Cancer Land. Woo! To this day, it haunts me. Anyway, she did at times express some sentiments about what you might call the traditional understanding of God. She wrote, "In fact, the idea of God, who is both all-powerful and all-good, is a logical impossibility." Well, what is logically impossible about an all-good and all-powerful God, okay? It's not logically impossible. Now, some could argue, and it's a reasonable argument on the face of it, that with all the pain and suffering in the world, it's hard to reconcile, and that's a reasonable argument, but it's not logically impossible. And also, she also wrote this, "But I doubt if such a universe, one run by a good and kindly God, would bear much resemblance to the one we have. The scene of constant carnage where black holes crouch in the center of galaxies and feed on stars and planets, where an asteroid could wipe out the Earth's most advanced reptiles just as they were beginning to nurture their young and hunt in packs, where babies die every day." Okay. Now, she doesn't believe in this God, or she seems to at least be trying to tell herself that she didn't believe in him. Anyway, Erin Rick, the book goes on. She's busy with her life, and she sort of puts her quest on hold for truth. You know, you gotta go to work. You gotta, you know, go to the dentist. You gotta take the kids to the pool. You know, so sometimes all these metaphysical quests get put on hold. But then she says, "But when I try to return to the old questions, despair and a kind of shame followed me and blocked the way. The impasse was this: if I let myself even tentatively speculate about that something, if I acknowledge the possibility of a non-human agent or agents, some mysterious other intervening in my life, can I still call myself an atheist? In my public life as a writer and the speaker, I have always been reliably an out atheist." Whoa! See, this is what I found fascinating in this book. She's an atheist, she's no God, and yet time and again, she seems in her quest for truth, and I'm assuming she's sincere in her quest as I was in mine, she seems to be coming back to, you know, something above, this other. And it's very interesting. She capitalizes the word other. Anyway, so despite being a hardcore atheist, materialist, I think she got a doctorate in physics. I know she got an advanced degree in one of the sciences. Then, listen to this quote. "But thanks to my years of research into history, prehistory, and theology. She delved into theology. I was intellectually prepared, maybe as recently as a decade ago, to acknowledge the possible existence of conscious beings, gods, spirits, extraterrestrials, that normally elude our senses, making themselves known to us on their whims and schedules in the service of their own agenda. In fact, I begin to think, edging to this conclusion, bit by bit with great trepidation, that I had seen one. Whoa. So again, this atheist fighting against it, she suddenly finds herself coming up against the idea of transcendence. In fact, she told how one time she was on a TV show, and when asked if she believed in God, and she answered, and a friend called her up later and said, "I detected the teeniest quiver of evasion in your answer." Whoa, is the atheist here suddenly having a crisis of faith? And she says, it's very interesting. She called her belief, she said, even though she would be creeping in that direction, she called this belief an intellectual surrender, or she called faith a state of wild delusion. But then, before the paragraph is done, she writes, "But experience, empirical experience, requires me to keep an open mind." Okay, very interesting. Then she ends the book talking about this other. Okay, and then she tells the story. I'm not going to read the whole quote because, again, it's hard to make sense of it. But she says that she looked at a parked car and it's gleaming in the sunlight, and she was stunned by the audacity of this object trying to condense the light of a star into its little circumference, stunned by the whole arrangement, building lines and trucks, and pouring in this ecstasy from the heavens. And she's had some kind of spiritual thing she's seeing here. Again, it doesn't ultimately make sense. She's seeing something and she has this moment of transcendence or whatever, and she says, "But all what appears to be the purpose of my mind, and no doubt yours, is the designated function beyond all mundane calculations, to condense all the chaos and mystery of the world into a palpable other, capitalized, or others. Not necessarily because we love it, and certainly not out of any intention to worship it, but because ultimately we may have no choice in the matter. I have the impression, growing out of the experience chronicled here, that it," this is amazing, "that it may be seeking us out." I mean, from a Christian perspective, from a biblical perspective, what an amazing thing for her to say. Seeking us out. Now, I can't judge her motives. I can't judge her motives here. But I found it fascinating that about, this is where her search starts to end. She starts seeing this something. It's not only is she seeking something, but this other, despite everything, is kind, she thinks, is seeking them out. And despite everything, that's where she wind up. Now, she says something here that I need to do a show on this, because I think this is where it all boils down to. But she says, at one point, she even started getting into what you might call animism, some kind of spiritual belief. Though her words here, listen to these words. This says everything to me. And I think what's here, I'm going to be brash enough and bold enough to say, I think what's here is ultimately what fuels deep down the atheist agenda. She's talking about her belief, but amoral gods, polytheistic gods, animal gods, these were all fine with me, if only because they seem to make no promises and demand no belief. Amoral gods, that is, gods without morals, no promises, no beliefs. In other words, gods that don't make us feel like we have to obey something and obey a moral code and do certain things. I mean, people don't like that. They don't like that, or at least some don't. No beliefs. It sounds as if she wanted truth. As long as the truth didn't come with any moral components and no beliefs. In other words, maybe she wanted truth just as long as the truth didn't cross her moral beliefs. Maybe. Now, I'm not saying the woman was immoral. You know, this idea you got to believe in God to be moral is nonsense, okay? But I just can't, I find it interesting. All right, maybe there's something out there. Despite her quest for truth, she keeps being drawn to what she calls the other. And again, she capitalizes it. And she says, all right, I'm kind of getting all right with that, as long as they don't really, or the other or others, doesn't really require anything about of me, okay? So maybe Barbara Ehrenreich, maybe this God, or the God of the Bible, or the God of traditional religion, maybe he stepped on her toes. Hey, God steps on my toes. I'm sometimes want to do things that I know that God doesn't want me to do. And I have to pray, you know, to say, help me not to do it. But anyway, I don't know. It just, the whole thing about this book, though, the part I, and I'm not judging her. I'm not judging her sincerity. It ain't over yet. But I found it fascinating. I found it fascinating that this die-hard-in-the-wool atheist, and I'm going to take her word for it, that she was on a sincere quest for truth, that no matter how hard she pushed against it, she kept on being drawn up to something transcendent. This other, as she called it with a capital T, and even thought that the other was seeking her out. You know, I have no doubt that the other was.